finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So we're going to respect April for clubs, lads. We'll let all the pundits back to play with their teammates. So it's just me, Conan and Connor here for the next couple of weeks until the championship kicks in again, and we'll get them all back. So, like, I mean, I've been on holidays for about a week. Hot of a mist, Conan. You've held the fort very, very strongly. Shit in your pants, I'm sure, presenting the hurling show.
It was like Ted and Dougal trying to make tea when Mrs. Doyle wasn't there.
I listened to Monday's show. Listen, you're absolutely grand. So
thanks very much, Willie.
I'll say grand. That's a very good compliment coming from me, you know, grand.
I'm converted.
7 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm converted though. I'm a fan of the Axe now. And you know when Cheddar Plunkett nods his head when you're making a point, you think, Jesus, maybe I'm not a complete bonehead.
Oh, it's a lovely feeling. It's a lovely feeling. I got that buzz when someone would say, because obviously I'd be giving opinions. When they don't actually shoot it down and say, no, that's stupid, you actually, you can really get into it. But for the last, since I started working here, I'd try and, you know, I'd often just throw across a bit of news of Red to Conan or whatever, but whenever it's hurling, like, he'll actually just laugh back at me and say, I have nothing to say about this. But yesterday morning, he just says to me, isn't it very unfair that Waterford aren't going to be playing any home games in the Munster League?
Oh my God.
No, what the hell are you talking about?
He's going to be a snob in like a month's time.
Yeah, this is it. He's fully fledged. He's completely got the hurling bug now. He's just going to be he's turned into a hurling snob. Walsh Park is not suitable for Waterford's home games, and Conan's really put out about this.
Yeah, well, explain it to Conor. They play in Walsh Park, they play Waterford, but they can't play there for the football.
And the Munster League is the Munster Championship, Conor.
Blah 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 blah.
Right. Well, there's a huge announcement to make here because anyone that listens to the show on a regular basis will know Conan has a few loves in his life, Derry football being one, his family, girlfriend, they're all the obvious ones. Dear McConnelly is probably
top of the list,
the big love of his life, the big love of his life across the podcast last year. And unbelievably, tonight Conan has a chance to lock horns with the great man. So in Parnell Park tonight, Conan is playing with Skerry's Harps, who he's transferred to, and they clash with St Vincent's. We don't know if Dear McConnelly is going to play. Conan's very put out. He's not sure, you know, how to G himself up to mark his hero or to be in close proximity to his hero. But that's going ahead tonight, Conan.
Yeah, and instead of sledging him, I'm just going to follow him behind and say, you know what, Jeremy, I think you're absolutely brilliant. You're the best player I've ever seen in my whole life. Can you sign this picture afterwards? And then he'll probably just turn around and slap me anyway, so I'll get the same impact from him.
Tell him you love him. Tell him the truth. Hold his hand. He'll give you a dig.
Best way to
Connolly's hot-headed. He's on a break. Yeah. Just say, listen, if you need any company on your break.
Did you hear what I said about you last week, Jeremy? Were you listening to the show? Woolly was wrong about you all along.
Yeah.
Eventually end up slapping.
Yeah, so anyone that's going to Parnell Park tonight, I want some photos of Conan close to Dear McConnelly with some memes or whatever you call them put onto it.
Photoshop if necessary.
Yeah, Photoshop if necessary, yeah. Right, we'll start off with Kevin McStay, lads, because I think he summed up the kind of mood. I needed a break after that league because it's bloody intense. It's week after week and I'm not togging out and running around for 70 minutes just doing podcasts on a Monday and a Thursday. But he says managers are wrecked after the league. He says, we're at it since the first weekend in December, non-stop, no Sundays, training twice a week, gyms, meetings, you're fairly flat out. April is a great chance to catch your breath. And like, I mean, that's exactly what April seems to be for a lot of people, is an opportunity to go, geez, that's tough. Another thing I would say is that it's tough for a lot of people and it's good to get a break in April. But the one people we don't think about that don't get any break in April are the inter-county players, because they're coming from that bloody intense season of league season and the early season competitions, and now they're expected to go back and play 4 weeks league or championship with their clubs, and then they're back into the intense. When do they get to go away with their misses or go out or have a few points? You know what I mean? It doesn't seem to be very fair on the inter-county players this April for clubs.
Oh, that's the game. If you want to play county, you just have to do it.
They're actually going to be flogged from January 1 until, you know, for nearly they'll have games. I know everybody says, and they say, oh geez, Woolley's a hypocrite, the players want games, and we all say that, but Jesus, you can't go from one extreme of not enough games to actually not getting a weekend off.
And it's trying to prepare for an inter-county championship, but shoehorning in a game or two of your club championship and then forgetting about that for a couple of months, it's just mentally completely off-putting as well.
That's the thing. And like you mentioned that, because there was a good piece in the Irish Times when I was away, I noticed from Eamon Donoghue, I think Malachy Clerkin helped to him out on it as well. And it was they broke down the counties and what they're actually doing in this April for clubs. Just made me wonder, like, what does this April for clubs mean? Is it just like thrown out there to appease people, or what is the joined up thinking, or is Croke Park going to make sure that every county treats it the same way? Is it supposed to alleviate the fixture chaos that comes after in September, October? If that's what it's there for, to alleviate the fixture chaos, most counties aren't playing championships, so that's not going to be alleviated in any way. So, like, I mean, the piece in the Irish Times says there will be 25 club championships with no fixtures being played. So of the 31 counties in the All-Ireland Football Championship and 13 Division 1 hurling counties, only 12 are playing two rounds of championship in April. 7 are playing one round. Now, this is interesting. Almost all of the counties, all but one, playing two rounds, were already playing championship fixtures in April anyways prior to this year. The exception being Roscommon, who are going to play two rounds in April, but they played two rounds in May last year. So what's this really changing from a fixtures congestion point of view? You know, fix the fixtures is what everybody wants to do. Is this helping fix the fixtures? I don't think it is. It's just leaving clubs back to their club mates to maybe bond with them for a little while, play a couple of league games, and then have them back into the inter-county season. I'm not really sure what has it been thought through very well.
I think it was just a token gesture to the CPA in the first place.
I think so.
And the problem was that, like, the GAA, when they said they were going to implement it, they said they were going to leave it up to the county boards, individual county boards, to enforce it, rather than saying it was a blanket thing across the board. But, like, as like anyone would have raised at the time, you can't impose that like month off for every county when some counties are out in the championship at the start of May and other counties are going to be out, you know, 6 weeks later. So Galway, for example, they're not playing their championship until after the Mayo game. And, like, who's surprised? I mean, like, are they going to have two championship games in April? That would mean the club players being with their clubs for all of April and giving them about 10 days to prepare for what is easily the biggest game with Mayo in a few years. So I don't know, like, I think people saw this coming down the line, and now it's just the chickens are coming home to roost, I suppose.
It would make no sense, especially when Kevin Walsh is trying to integrate maybe 5 or 6 Curragh Finn lads back into the squad and maybe 2 or 3 or 4 into the team. He can't let them go back for April. Like, he needs to play challenge games with these lads. He needs to get them back into the mix, because you'd imagine there's a few going to start. And the same problem down in Limerick with the Na Piarsaigh fellas. They've got about 5 potential starters, and how the hell are they supposed to get back into the mix if they're off playing with their clubs for the month?
And as much as club players have been screwed over recently, I think when this came out, we were all just like, what? Nobody wants April? Like, wait, like, it's not a good suggestion. Like, you know, nobody, that doesn't satisfy anybody. And it's very funny, like, you know, preparing for a Dublin championship now in April, because it's really weird, like, because suddenly you've only played 2 league games and it's like, right, you're playing the biggest game of your season in April. Like, it's like, how the hell are you supposed to get ready for
it? It's a couple of different pre-seasons, and, like, I mean, this is nothing new. This is stuff we talk about all the time on the show. Like, I mean, when this came out, no one was saying that this is all hindsight stuff. This is stuff that was very easily predicted that was going to be the issue. And it seems to me the April for clubs makes no sense to me whatsoever. There's no Ulster county using it for championship. And again, this is no criticism of them, because that's exactly what I would do. I would wait until August. Every county except for the All-Ireland semi-finalists is going to be out before August. So you can all start in August, play August, September, your club championships in summer months in a row. And doesn't that sound an awful lot better, you know, than this kind of thing, trying to get one or two played and then continuing it on? So, like, I mean, it just doesn't make sense. But again, there's just nothing really new. And what annoys me is that every county is doing what they like, you know what I mean? And the expertise in every county board, is that at a level that, you know, that's required to run businesses? Again, this is something that we've said 101 times, but Croke Park is almost like, this is April for months, do what you like with it. And like, there could be absolute incompetence going on throughout the country. And it's like Croke Park don't care. You know, Pádraig Duffy told me before and off the ball, you can't tell them what to do. You know, that they're their own republics.
And who does?
Well, you absolutely should. But because we'd actually sound like a broken record going on about that. But
it probably suits Mayo though as well, because you get that break. It does nothing to do with clubs, but just Mayo have a couple of weeks to try and get people back for a Galway game. Galway were on a great trajectory. It seemed like a long, tough season for Mayo as well, but now it's a new season sort of when it comes to championship.
It does, and especially I think if you've had a bad league and suddenly your players go back to their clubs for 3 weeks, it's coming back like a new season. Like, I think, you know, the momentum good momentum is lost, bad momentum is obviously broken
up. It suits us in this particular case, but in general, it's because we need to bring players back that have been injured during the league. But in general, I don't think it's just like we played our first round of the championship at the weekend, and now we're not playing again until we don't know when. And like it's group games, it's not knockout either for now. We still have to play two group games, but we won't know when it is until Mayo go out.
Yeah.
We haven't even got a date yet. And I thought that was the whole point in the first place, that players will know what dates they're playing so they can organise everything.
Oh, none of that's been fixed. None of that's been fixed. So now in Mayo, you just played one full round of championship and it's just like just stuck out there in the middle of nowhere. That's done. It's just so stupid. Like, genuinely, because I tweeted about this yesterday, the tweet to that link in the Irish Times. And everybody unanimously were saying nobody wants to play championship in April.
Yeah.
Nobody's ready for championship in April. You know what I mean? They want to play league and get through the league games and then build up for the championship. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? In the summer. Because club players are the same as everyone else. They watch the championship during the summer. They have the real grow for it. Yeah. They're dying to get out and show what they can do after watching a match on telly. And it goes hand in hand. They don't want to be just lamped in for a championship match in April when, let's be honest, we're just not up for it. We're just not really up for it. But here's another thing I want to talk about, lads. And I want to get this conversation started. And this is the Super 8s, which I'm really, really looking forward to, because you criticise this new championship structure all you want and there's so many flaws in it. But the one thing that I think isn't a flaw is the month of July is going to be unbelievable. When we get those 8 teams together and they're going to play one home game, one away game and one game in Croke Park. So we're going to see loads of big games in provincial venues. We're going to see one neutral venue and we're going to see one venue game in Croke Park. All but one county is going to be doing that, because Dublin, it looks like, is going to be playing 2 games in Croke Park and 1 game away. So their neutral game is in Croke Park and their home game is in Croke Park. Now, that's just wrong. Now, I don't care what anybody says. If that happens, this is just an admission by GAA headquarters that Croke Park is Dublin's home ground. And is that fair? That we all know. Like, I mean, it's obvious to everyone it's their home ground. Mm. But is it the GAA actually admitting that it's their home ground? So last year I had Pádraig Duffy on the show and it was around the time he announced the Super 8s, and I asked him about that exact point.
Well, Dublin will play their home games presumably in Croke Park, so that does give them an advantage.
But it does. I'm surprised at that.
Well, the point I'd make is, to be fair to Dublin, that's no different than it is at the moment. They went to, as we all know, to Nolan Park this year, but that's no different.
Let's not mention the war here.
No, that's not mention the war, exactly, especially to a Leishman. But the one point I would make is, the one thing this would guarantee with Dublin is, this year, every year, Dublin will have to head down the country. And that would be brilliant for the championship, because to be fair to Dublin, they bring supporters, their supporters will travel. Dublin playing an away game in the championship, not a once-off every few years as we had this year, but on a regular basis, I think that would be brilliant for the championship.
Ah, look, listen, there's absolutely nobody arguing with that. Mm. But why would Dublin's home game be in Croke Park? Why would it not be, for example, if you wanted to be fair about it, move it even to Nolan Park, to a Moor Park, make them go out of Croke Park, because Croke Park is their home venue. Like, if it's supposed to be a home and away basis, why do Dublin get the advantage of getting their home game in their home ground?
No, it's a point. And look, the proposal is a proposal, it's not the detail that could be looked at, and then that's fair enough. I'm sure, to be fair to Dublin,
would you not think about that before you would make that decision? That fingers are going to be pointed at a decision like that, and it's going to be pointed in the direction of the GAA want more revenue out of the Dubs, and that's why they're that's why they're doing that. When you're actually sitting down to do that, would you not do it on the fairer basis rather than give them the Croke Park and allow these criticisms come at you?
Well, look, I'm sure if this proposal is passed, there'll be plenty of tweaks and changes before the final version comes out. The one thing I would say just about the financial side of it, if we wanted to enhance our finances, you'd say, right, we'll play this round robin and we'll play all the games in Croke Park, because Croke Park, there's no question about it, because of the facilities available, the number of seats, etc. Financially, that would be far, far more advantageous. But we're saying here, the 8 extra games will all go to the provinces. Now, I take your point about Dublin. To be fair to Dublin, I think Dublin enjoy, and the players love going to the provinces.
They
may well have no objection to it, and I'm sure it's something that can be discussed. But as it stands, I didn't write this in terms of just looking at Dublin. I looked at it in terms of the general rules would be one home, one away, one in Croke Park.
Yeah, so let's start the discussion on it, if that's what Pádraig Duffy said, that it's not set in stone. And I think it's unbelievable. And number one, I think, and I should have pulled them up at the time and I didn't, is that financially, if they wanted more revenue, they would play every game in Croke Park. But I think that's total nonsense, because if, say, Tipperary and Tyrone, for example, do you think in Oma Park are down in set. Well, Tipperary's not a good example because they don't support their team, but you get my point.
Yeah.
There would be more in a provincial ground at that and a home and away ground than in Croke Park. You know what I mean?
They wouldn't stage it at Croke Park.
I think it would. So yeah. I think that's a moot point. But I think it's absolutely unbelievable that the Director General of the GAA at the very start of that, and anyone listening, go back and rewind it, he says that gives them an advantage. That gives Dublin an advantage, but we're going to do it. Isn't that unbelievable that they're going to give Dublin an advantage by playing two games in Croke Park, which is their home venue? So let me repeat this. Their game in Croke Park is allowed. Their home venue should not be in Croke Park as well, or else you're just saying this is a clear advantage, like Pádraig Duffy just said. We're giving Dublin, a team that doesn't need any advantages, and it needs to be pointed out, of course, or we'll be blamed of anti-Dublin by all the trolls. Dublin will have no interest, no problem in leaving Croke Park. This is not a Dublin issue. This is a GAA greed issue where they're going to milk Dublin because they can pack out Croke Park in a big game.
So then what would you say to the fans who would argue, like, yeah, they would travel anywhere, but there's like 80,000 and 90,000 that would fill Croke Park? You know, so there's so many fans that can be catered for. What would you say to them when you're saying go to Parnell Park?
I would say tough shit. I would say have Dublin build a home ground that's suitable for you. Every fan doesn't get to go see a game. You go on Ticketmaster for a gig, for a match. If you're not there immediately, you don't get a ticket. Sure, if that's the case for a Champions League game, let's build a stadium for 300,000 so that everybody can, that one. That's not the reality of sport. Everybody doesn't get to see the game. It'll be on telly, but you don't have a Dublin fans, because there's a lot of them, do not have a God-given right to go to the game. Like, this was the excuse for Nolan Park. Let's get more Dublin fans in. Why? That's meant to be a home game for Laois, well then there should be much less Dublin fans than Laois in the interest of fairness.
Or is it just because they can?
That's the way the GAA think. That get more of them in. There's lots of them. Why turn away that free money?
Yeah.
That's not the attitude of fairness in sport. That if it's not meant to be a home game, then the advantage of the majority of the supporters has to be taken off them, you know?
But the big thing I took from what Pádraig Duffy had to say there was his defence of it was that, well, it's no different to what's been going on. So, like, well, just because we've done it this way, we're going to continue to do it this way. So that seems to be how he was how he's defending it. But, like, you said earlier on, well, is it fair? But it's not fair. But since when has it been fair? Dublin have been accommodated like this for years.
Well,
you know?
For years now. But
it's not their fault.
It was always the case. I have the issue with it. The issue with Dublin playing in Croke Park in the Championship has never been an issue with me. Like, I mean, for Leinster semi-finals, Leinster finals. But Dublin now play their league games there. So it is, in essence, their home ground. You know what I mean? But the GAA will say it's not. Dublin will say it's not Parnell Park, even though I haven't played any game of significance at Parnell Park in years. But this is just going to shine a light on the fact that this is clearly an advantage. And they're not my words, they're Pádraig Duffy's words. But we're going to do it anyways.
Yeah, I can only remember one other instance, just in the case of balance, or like an interest of balance, when they put the Ulster final down to Croke Park, anticipating that there'd be enough interest from Armagh and Tyrone.
Yeah, that was in the interest of both teams now, you know?
Yeah, but it was like they were trying to get as many fans into the stadium as they could as possible. I'm just thinking of what the argument would be from Dublin fans, who I'm sure will no doubt be pissed off at you saying that this is a joke or whatever. And I do agree, I think they should be playing Parnell Park. But
well, I do think
if you can fit more fans in, maybe that's what they're
fans
thinking.
On both sides. But you see, I actually do think that the GAA were also milking Tyrone and Armagh, who were obsessive about their teams.
Well, funny thing, Donegal got to the final that year and completely blew up in their faces.
It's true, it did. But like, I mean, that was fair on both Armagh and Tyrone. If this is like, I mean, Dublin versus, will I use Tipperary again? why are they in my head? They're a great team, but again, or if Monaghan, for example, that's not fair. Equally fair for Croke Park, where you'll have 80% Dublin and 20% Monaghan. I don't see how. I think sport should be interests of fairness. And if you have a home venue, if you draw a team in the FA Cup that can only fit 7,000 in their stadium, that's Manchester United's hard luck. That's 7,000 of their fans, and you go and your fans. Now, you can strike a deal with them and say, look, we'll play it in Old Trafford and give you the revenue out of it. And some small teams will do that just because they need the money. But if they say, no, we want the home advantage, well, then Man United get 100 fans in the ground and they get 6,900. And that's the interest of fairness in sport. I don't see any of that fairness happening within the GAA when it comes to Dublin. I see them as a cash cow with potential 70,000 supporters looking to get into a game in Croke Park. And why would we turn that away? That's the way they look at it, from a financial point of view and not from a sporting point of view, which is the way you know, I think they should be looking at it. But look, I'm actually going to mention this at the top of the show for every show until those fixtures come out. I am, and I actually stand outside Croke Park with a placard protesting if they play two games at Croke Park. It's not fair. It's not fair. In a sporting context, it's not fair, and it's not fair. End of story. I'll challenge anyone to tell me.
I just want to get that meme of anyone's outside Croke Park and Willie's got a placard to send it in.
Kieran Murphy had a good piece in the Irish Times today, lads, and he's talking about the big shitstorm that's going to come on the horizon in May when we're all complaining. See, we're all kind of spoiled for choice at the moment because TG4 are showing us so many games throughout the league, and we have Air Sports showing us the Saturday night games, and then on Sunday, geez, Air Sport or TG Cahir could actually show four games on a Sunday, which just drives me, like, it's great, but like I've spent my whole day Sunday and I'm trying to prepare this podcast watching matches, but that's another thing. But he's saying that the deal signed in December 2016 for the TV coverage of the GAA Championship stipulates that there's going to be 45 games shown across RT and Sky Sports and BBC showing live coverage of the Ulster Championship. But that decision and selling those TV rights preceded the new championship structure. So they sold 45 live games like this. And this is just an example of how it's just all made up as they go along. Like, there's no strategic planning in any of this. This is just like Pádraig Duffy thinking up of these super eights, and now it's going to be shit. We've an awful lot more than 45 good games. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I mean, so Kieran broke down like that there's going to be 16 games in the hurling championship in the first 5 weeks of the championship, and he says by any measure would be worthy of full coverage. So, like, I mean, all these Munster league games, we're not going to be seeing that many of them. There's lots of games on the same weekend. Like, I think there's three hurling Munster league games and Tyrone Monaghan on in the same, you know what I mean, on the same day, and like there might be only one of these shown. So they've completely hamstrung themselves by selling TV rights before they had any kind of vision as regards what the championship was going to be like, or can they even tweak that now?
So there's eight extra Super 8 quarterfinals now than what there was.
Yeah.
So that means all the qualifiers are probably impacted.
Some of the qualifier games. Yeah.
All those games Mayo
though.
Played last year. Derry, Clare, London. Yeah. Or not London. Where did that come from?
Cork.
But like, yeah, all those cracking games for the qualifiers will be impacted by that. Some of the smaller counties definitely might not get a look in, even more so. So it is becoming that monopoly game where if you're a bigger team and you get to the last eight, you're going to be looked after a lot better, and the smaller ones will barely get a look in.
And the problem was the hurling championship was kind of thrown together so late, do you know, that they didn't realise that there's going to be so many games in May that they wouldn't be able to show live.
That came as a backlash from the Super 8.
Exactly.
That was no thought forward planning on that either. Like, isn't it unreal? Like, it's just
crazy.
Made up as it goes along.
Yeah. But like, would it have been a case that, like, I know there's a limit to the number of games, but like, had this been thought through, well, then there was potential for the likes of Ayr or TG Cahir to come in and say, especially on the games that, like, because say the last round of the hurling league, all of them have to be played at the same time, so obviously you can't show all of them. But if it was a case that Ayr and TG Cahir came in, they might be able to show different ones that would have been on RTÉ and Sky. But sure, how could they plan it when it was all brought through so
that's
quickly?
What I mean, like, I mean, do we need a special congress now? Because they went for 5 years, like, it can't even be can it be reviewed before that? I'm not sure. Maybe a special congress could do something like that, because what really frustrates me, and it would be something I would love to do, is do like a midweek highlight show, right? So an analysis based show like a Monday Night Football. RTÉ only have highlights for a Sunday night, they use that for a Sunday game. TG4 have highlights for
Monday.
Yeah. And they just show actual highlights without any analysis. And who's the other one?
Ayr have Wednesday night.
Oh, Ayr have Wednesday night. So Ayr, in fairness to them, try to do an analysis show and stuff like that. But like, I mean, what my question on this is, why are they all hamstrung by only being able to use one night? Would the GAA not like to see numerous shows using their highlights? Like, I asked the GAA before, could I use some footage of John Milan celebrating from 2003 or something? And they said no for the Sports Show Live. This was a 12-second clip. Like, and then the excuse was that we're using the highlights on our own website now. And I says, oh, sure, that's fine. We'll give a full credit of where we got the highlights from, and we'll drive traffic to your website where the full game is on. Answer comes back, no. It made no business sense. It was like, why would you not allow highlights be used? It makes no sense to get your product out there with analysis, and I just don't understand it. Here's something that I wanted to bring up, because I didn't know about this. So Fermanagh GAA chairman Greg Kelly has stated that action must be taken in order to get clubs to provide referees. So I didn't know this. So there's a shortage of referees in Fermanagh, and there's only currently 24 on the referee list. I'm not sure how many referees could be in a county, but he wants penalties imposed on clubs that don't provide referees. I didn't know clubs had to provide referees. I thought fellas on their own back decided I want to be a referee, that four could be from a club and another one would have none, but clubs have to provide referees or else there's going to be penalties. Did you know that? I didn't know that. I just said I'd throw this in here.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Well, mate of mine is a referee now, but like I wasn't aware of any other referees from Calchemar like in for the last 20-25 years, so I don't think there's an obligation. Maybe that applies to specific counties, so.
Yeah, maybe if there's a shortfall of them that you have to start proposing them or something like that. But anyways, listen, there's not too much to say on that other than the fact that I don't know all the dynamics around this referee and stuff. Club All-Stars have been announced, lads. Did you know that there were Club All-Stars this year? But it's a great idea. I'm thinking back to 2004. I would have been a banker to get one. Leinster Player of the Year. Could all of us have said that I was an All-Star? You don't have to go any further about that when you're in the
Twitter bio started for life.
Yeah, so I don't think there's going to be very much kind of debate around these All-Stars, purely for the fact that nobody really knows how everybody's been playing. Like, no, what matches have we seen outside of TG4 ones? Like, I mean, John Heslin didn't get on it, and I kind of, you know, remember him doing well throughout Leinster, but that's just reading match reports. Yeah. Nobody's really seen it. So I know AIB are doing this in conjunction with the GEA, and I got an email. I don't know, did you get an email about giving nominations or something like that? And I was like, whoa, way too much work to be replying to that.
Put me down for the same as last year.
Whatever everyone else thinks, I'm okay with. So, like, I mean, there won't be any real debate about this, you know. And like, I mean, you made a good point, Connor. It's more how many games of yours has been featured on television will give you a better.
Well, I noticed that the only one outside of the semi-finalists was Paddy McBurney, who featured in, I think, 3 live games in a row on Air Sports. So
on air.
I don't think that's a coincidence.
No, it's not rocket science to know that if you get on the television, people would see, because otherwise there's no way of knowing.
He was amazing in those games.
I tried to debate it. I was suggesting before the show, what about Neil Douglas from Castlebar? Where's he? And Connor was like, well, I've only seen him once, and I'd only seen him against Carrafin as well. So I was like, oh, but he seemed really good.
Literally, it's impossible to debate this, lads. Like, I mean, the inter-county All-Stars we'll all give out about because we've seen the championship right through a lot of games on television. But this is just like, you just respect that this is the team.
Yeah.
Well done, lads. And it's a great honour. And then Footballer of the Year has not been announced yet. That's Ian Burke, Michael Farraher and Liam Silk. All three Carrafin fellas. Again, like, I mean, I can't say who deserves that, because I wouldn't have seen the Galway Championship and I wouldn't have seen all the Connacht Club Championships. John Heslin for cleaning up the dressing room. I mean, you would have thought that story would have got him on that team.
He's an honorary mention.
Yeah. Right, listen, we'll come back with a little bit more news.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens and it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show, it doesn't look great. There was maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out very well, unlucky to lose. Like, let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50%
pain, 100% reason to remember the name. So Brian Cody was on Terrace Talk. It must have been with Weishi Fogarty. I just saw a report from him today, and he was talking about a healthy dressing room. And this will come as a surprise to nobody with Brian Cody, that you try to ensure that they don't have egos, he said. So he identified egos as being a really big problem in the dressing room. So he said they can have a reputation, all right, because that's something that comes as a result of people's writings or pontifications about them. But an ego is something they have themselves and can be seen very easily. And I would suggest that a dressing room without egos is a very important thing to have. Certainly, I think that's very much part and parcel of our dressing room, and I would see it as being a prerequisite for making sure you maintain a healthy spirit and a heavy respect in the dressing room for all players. I'm like I understand exactly where Brian Cody's coming from. He's the Mick O'Dwyer of hurling. He's an exceptionally unbelievable manager. I think it's a very conservative way of thinking about things. Like, yeah. I mean, would Ronaldo get on the Kilkenny hurling team? Like, I mean, can you have a player that has an ego and not see that as a bad thing once he's a hard trainer and once he's a team player? Like, Ronaldo's not even a team player. And he's so good, he's indulged. And he was indulged by Alex Ferguson, who would probably have a lot in common with Brian Cody, you know? So, Jim Gavin, for example, preaches this humility, and he has Dublin with that same mindset, and maybe it's the All Blacks thing. I don't know. I think an ego is no harm. Yeah. Like, you tap into that kind of confidence of players.
Helps almost. Like, I'm just delighted we're back talking about hurling anyway. But, always thought, like, that sort of bit of arrogance would sort of rub off on players, especially before games when you do have a bit of an ego. Maybe it's individually, but when you're looking at somebody thinking he's pretty sure of himself, it's good being on the same team as him, and you look forward to going to battle a bit more. And it's a bit of crack sometimes as well. Like, normally the boys of the ego are the boys that you can poke fun at a bit more. Like, you know?
But I honestly think there's a concerted effort in the GAA to take all personality out of players. Yeah. All kind of unique personality traits or flair is seen as an absolutely horrible
just
thing.
Look at the reaction to anyone that celebrates a score. It's kind of like, oh, look at him, just who does he think he is, kind of thing. But I 100% agree. Like, I think you have to tolerate egos, as long as you said, as long as they're not detracting from the team in terms of they're not putting in the same effort. And like you talk about Jim Gavin, like, Jeremy Connolly mightn't be the best time to talk about him because he's kind of a bit absent at the moment, but like, he definitely has an ego. I mean, to have an ego to wear its sleeveless top, day of the All-Ireland final, you know, with all the scrutiny that was on him. But as long as he's not, as long as it doesn't detract from the teammate, like, you're looking at a dressing room full of robots. Besides, you have to have, you have to be able to tolerate those sorts of characters. Just on Cody, it's no real surprise. There was a great story in Henry Shefflin's book. He's saying that Cody has taken the team to task, and he names even hurlers of the year aren't cutting it. There was only two hurlers of the year in the room, including Henry Shefflin. He was driven mad, then wondering was it him or the other fella. But I'd be definitely agreeing with the way you're looking at it. Yeah.
It's hard to know, but I would say it was the other fella, because Cody absolutely loved Henry Shefflin. That was it. Now that you mentioned Henry Shefflin, and I heard you talking about this on the podcast on Monday, Conan, is TJ is the new Henry Shefflin, and I was like, geez, why do you have to compare TJ to Henry Shefflin?
I knew you would like that one.
I didn't like
it.
No, yeah. I was like, geez, this is like, I mean,
this is Hogan Stan Forum stuff.
Yes, they are both talismen, and they're both from Kilkenny, but they're not alike as players. They're both from the same club, but they're not similar as players. So, like, I mean, I don't know. It is that kind of Hogan Stan kind of thing, that he's the new whatever, or the obsession with, like, Aguero to be the best player in the world, you know what I mean? Yeah, every player always have a label as the new something or whatever. Like, I mean, TJ is just brilliant, and that's just he's the new brilliant. But he was in the media talking about it during the week, Conan. So I said, I got this quote out for you. He said, "It's great to be up there with Henry. Obviously, he was my idol that I tried to mimic as much as I could. Look." Listen, I'm not Henry Shefflin. In true GAA style, look it. I'm not Henry Shefflin. I'm my own player. I'm very different than Henry. I'm just performing and leading the team as best I can. And I think that's the biggest comparison of the two, the performing and leading. They're the two that they have very much in common. There's no pressure. I'm just going out and enjoying my game and do what I do best, and that's hurling. And that's about winning ball, winning dirty ball, and that's what I'm about. And I think maybe that's what Henry was about as well. So maybe there's a few more comparisons between the two than I initially thought.
But like, if TJ had an ego, if he knew that he was good, like, he is good, but like, why would anyone care? You know, like, it's just, it's the same with Ronaldo and Messi. Some people call them arrogant assholes sometimes. Like, well, they know they're the best players in the world.
Yeah, there's a reason to be arrogant.
Yeah, like, so, like, yes, it's not always flattering, but you mentioned, like, you know, the sort of trying to drag people out of this habit, like, turn them all into robots. Go to any underage game as well. When somebody picks up or doesn't pick up a ball, bend their back to try to scoop it up to themselves, parents are immediately bend your back. That's not how we do it here.
Bend your back. You'll be called windy, like, for not going down on it. Now, some players can be a bit windy, but there's a time when that works and you don't have to break your stride and it's perfect skill.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You know, but there are a time when you'll see a young player actually being afraid to go down on it, you know, to get the knee in the back or whatever. But no, I agree, that's completely frowned upon. Flick anything fancy. It's very conservative, isn't it?
It's just, I suppose, what we do as a collective then. It's like, let's just, you know, get on with it. Get on with your life and just keep your head down. And
yeah, but there's certain things, like that flick up off the ground would be massively frowned upon, but a dummy solo would be cheered. There's certain skills. Maybe it's just a kind of a soccer
depends
thing
on the player. Anytime Kieran McDonald flicked the ball up with his left foot, everyone in Mayo was, oh my god, if Colin McManaman tried it and it didn't work, they'd be like, oh, you bend your
maybe you have to earn the right.
I think you have to earn the right.
You have to get into that bracket of just skill. But I wanted to mention Paul Pogba on this whole idea of egos and flair, and all the talk was him dying his bloody hair, and like he dyed it blue and white for the France game and scored, and then kept it blue and white for the Man City game. And even Gary Neville, who should really know better, and these fellas are criticising his bloody hair.
Yeah,
are you for real? So then he scores two goals, drags Manchester United back into it. So if his hair represents how he plays, should everyone dye their hair blue and white, and then they might all play at his, like, I mean, it's so stupid. Yeah. Like, it has no correlation with how you play.
It's something that, again, not to use them as bastions, but like when Roy Keane's asked about something like that, he doesn't have any of it though. Yeah. He's like, who cares with this fucking hair? Like, you know, let's talk about the man or the football or whatever. Like, you know, we think that Roy Keane probably wouldn't like it in the changing room or whatever, but when he's asked about it on TV, it's like, piss off. Like, he's, I'm sure he would tolerate egos. Actually, he loves egos. Like, he likes people who stand up to the manager and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think now maybe James Horan, when he came in over Mayo, identified that, you know, the white boots and the blonde hair and all had maybe gone a little bit too far, or that maybe too many. I think an ego or two isn't bad in the dressing room, but I think a whole lot of fellas going around with egos is absolutely unhealthy.
I
agree with Cody, egos are unhealthy, but you'll tolerate one or two fellas. Like, because some lads can have an ego and it'd be a real kind of, I don't know, like, likeable quality in someone. I quite like someone who just is kind of very short. Our boss Niall McGarry, for example.
I assume that's going to be cut. Often those fellas are going to be the fellas you'd look to, like, 10 minutes into the second half when the game is going against you. These lads have the personality to pull these games out of the fire, and sometimes they might go off individually and they'll do stuff that kind of will go against the team. But like, a lot of the time, these lads are the guys who you want to look to because they have that personality, and then you know that when, you know, that they can back up their arrogance, as we were saying with Ronaldo and Messi earlier on.
Yeah.
Did you have an ego, Willie?
I always had an ego. Yeah. I think you'd be a liar if you said you didn't have an ego. I'd say any inter-county player that got to that level said they didn't have an ego. I don't know. You have to, like, everybody has a bit of an ego. I'd say all three of us have an ego. If you're in media in any way, you probably fancy yourself in some way. Like, I mean, that's the reality of it. As both of you go very quiet.
Self-reflection. How can I make myself sound more?
Can't play off that humble image anymore.
You need some therapy with Jim Gavin. That's what maybe everyone in this room does. Connor, talk to us about Keane Hanley, because I'm excited about this fella, and if he's the centre forward that could potentially be a top centre forward, Aidan O'Shea could play full forward line a bit more often, or maybe there's new dynamics could come into this Mayo team. How good is he? Is he going to start? Give us your report.
I don't think he's going to start. He played for Bala at the weekend in Championship, by all accounts played well. He didn't score, but the thing with Keane Hanley, from like a Mayo fan's point of view, is that, like, we haven't seen Keane Hanley really in 3 years, because he got injured in Northern semi-final, like, really bad injury, torn ACL, and then when he was in Australia he had a few problems as well. But I will say that before that we had massive hopes for Keane Hanley, as high as we had for Pearce Hanley, and unfortunately he went to Australia. So, like, he was captain of the Mayo Miners before he left, real leader, centre forward, as you say, a real kind of powerhouse, as well as a bit of class to him as well. So I just think, like, he's only back a couple of months. I think it might be too soon, definitely for Galway, but we might see him kind of further down the line. Like, we played Keane's club there in a pre-season game a few weeks ago. He didn't play, but he was out doing runs with Donny Vaughan beforehand, so I imagine that they were keen to kind of deal. Donny was rehabbing at the time, but in terms of barometer for fitness for Mayo, you're not going to get much fitter than Donny, so it's kind of to bring him up to speed, I'd imagine. But all reports, like, Andy Moran said he was a bit ring rusty for the club, but like
his second game he did better, I saw Andy Moran said.
Yeah, in terms of him training with Mayo though, all reports have been positive so far. So you'd like as in, I think we need a boost of some description. We need something, as we've been saying for years, something different, just a different card to be able to play, especially in an attack. So while I think it's too early to say that he might be involved against Galway, I'd have hopes to be involved at some stage down the line.
Right, okay, because it probably is, it's not the greatest time of the year to be coming back. I think, wasn't it, Ty Connelly came back early in the year and it wasn't until midsummer that he really hit his stride and started playing really well and ended up getting an All-Star. And like, I mean, a good few have come back and played well. I'm not sure whether Paddy Brophy came back actually last summer. He's probably the good one to go by, and he played well when he came back after, and he came back, yeah, I think it was June we had him on the show here. So like, I mean, that's maybe the person he needs to talk to. Or
it's a pity we couldn't ease him back in during the league, because he came back like early in the year. If we could eased him back in during the league, because Galway is so important and so vital now. I doubt Stephen Rochford thinks he can just throw him in there, because if we lose that, you're looking at a run through the qualifiers and then on to the Super 8. So Galway's too soon, but hopefully down the line at some stage we'll see him.
Yeah, we might see him after Mayo lose to Galway and then nearly lose five games in a row in the qualifiers, and then
so he'll be peaking for Crowe
by the time he gets to the Super 8s. He should be in flying form. Kieran Kilkenny was in the news this week as well, and obviously didn't go to it, because I remember asking Kieran Kilkenny before and Kieran seemed fine about it, and then had to ask the media manager, who obviously said no, that he wasn't allowed, and Kieran had to just go along with it. But I'd love to talk to Kieran, but I'd love to get him on the show and just have a good chat to him about the evolution of his game in the last two or three years, and how he thinks, because he obviously is a very intelligent footballer and thinks about his game a lot. Now he's in the full forward line, he's scoring a lot more, he's got 216 during the league. The lateral passing and the pointing and all is gone, and he seems like a much more direct, likeable kind of player, you know. And that was the critique I had of him all last year, when he was getting those 55 possessions against Donegal and getting man of the match. I was like absolutely unimpressed by him. I was like, he's so much better than what he's showing, and some people thinking that was playmaking. Anyways, he's talking about his game and what an all-rounder he is, really, because like, I mean, we forget he plays wing back as well. So he's talking about the changes to his game, and he says, if you're playing half back or around the middle area, a lot would be based on athleticism and endurance. Closer to the goal, there's more agility, speed, and you still need that level, but you still need that level of athleticism. But you do need that kind of strength and power that you're able to provide an option for a pass inside, a hold off your man. And it's just, he's talking about getting the balance between too powerful and being athletic, and how he kind of thinks about, right, I'm wing forward, and maybe Jim Gavin went to him this year and says, right, well, we want you in full forward, I want you on a different weights kind of program than you were last, you know what I mean, last year. And I'm wondering, is it that gone that scientific now? Because if he's full forward, he needs explosive speed, he needs more strength, and he needs kind of, you know, maybe a lot more twisting and turning to his training, whereas he just, like, he could do Mick O'Dwyer type training for the game he used to have, which is all based on endurance and try and outrun Lee Keegan, and, you know, and Lee Keegan would be similar, that he would just be a road runner, and that's his training really enough, because it's endurance. Obviously they need the strength work too, but just the different skill sets for the different lines. And almost, does the game go to the point where we know they all have individual weights programs, but when you're a versatile player who can play on both lines, like, that obviously blurs the lines of having that, you know.
And like, he was held to the standard of Kieran Kilkenny. Like, you know, there's a lot of players who do what he does anyway, he just passes it off, and, you know, they do that playmaking role, get on handy ball and pop it off again. But we knew what he could do.
Yeah,
like, we knew that he was so much more than just that. So noise inside, and yeah, it is, you're right, it's a completely different game, and maybe he's got that freedom because that's where Dublin are allowed to do something, whereas outside it's like, if you lose the ball, we're in trouble, because teams, like, you know, the Donegal thing probably still haunts them. So if we lose the ball anywhere in that middle third, we're fucked. Like, so now Kieran Kilkenny's in there, he's allowed to lose the ball basically, and it is 20-30 yard bursts, and then it's over, like, the move is over with within 5-10 seconds. Whereas when he's out, it's just constantly going and back.
He's so efficient. Like, I mean, when you look at that Dublin half forward line, and it was always a critique I had of Dear McConnelly and Kieran Kilkenny, and they're marking Lee Keegan and Donny Vaughan, and they're spending half the time chasing him. I don't want my two Ferrari players doing that. I'd rather have them on the full forward line, where, okay, you're going, you might have to follow a full back the odd time now, the way the game has gone, but you're not going to be killed doing it. Like, it's so restrictive for Kieran Kilkenny to be using up all his energy to do a job that Brian Howard can do.
You know what I mean?
Like, it doesn't really make any sense. So it's a great, for Dublin, it's a great move for them from a team perspective. And one thing he did say during the week as well, he says, once I'm in the middle of the action, I'm happy. And that's a fact with Kieran Kilkenny. He's a born leader and he doesn't shirk responsibility. And once he, in that central full forward role, he's in there. He's kind of the man. He, I think he needs that. He at this point in his career now, he needs to be the main man in that full forward line. And I think for his progression, I think he is now, and I think it's vital that he is.
You were just on about his weights as well. I remember there was a picture from the team Dublin team holiday, and Kenny was wearing a vest, and his arms just looked like a normal man's legs. They were absolutely massive. So yeah, whether he'd put on weight since last year, but I think as well that he's become he's not nasty, but he's kind of getting in defenders' faces more. Oh, yeah, a bit more. I noticed that over the league. I don't know, did he always have that in his game? But after he'd get a score, defender would be coming out and he just really like...
Oh, he pushes them. Yeah, I said that.
Getting a bit kind of nasty. But like the way he is at the moment, where he's playing now, like say Lee Keegan kind of marked him out of the final last year. Imagine if Lee Keegan had to worry about him in the full back line as well, you know? So that just kind of adds another dimension to his game. And like now he's probably the best footballer in the country, I'd say. So I'd say Dublin probably stick with him for there for the time being.
And there's nothing he was doing or in the middle where you're thinking, oh, they're missing that now. He was just being honest and working hard. And
that's all.
Like Brian Howard, as you say, is doing a good job with that. Like,
they can do that. That job is not a skilled job.
Yeah.
It's a dedicated job, and you, obviously if you have a bit of vision and talent, it's a string to your bow when you have the ball. A lot of that's hard work, you know what I mean? Hard work, don't give away the ball. Kieran Kilkenny he's better than that, honest,
he'd never shirk it though.
No, same
with Connolly as well, and that was nearly to their detriment that they'd often find themselves back in the half back line, as you said, because they just buy into it and they'd never leave a half back off for a handy run or anything like that.
Connolly had a bit more though. He was like, I'm going to take on the 70-yard pass, I'm going to put it outside my booth, and Connolly's just brilliant.
Yeah, well, Connolly would take more chances than Kilkenny. Yeah. I think Kilkenny is just such an efficient player. It's incredible, even his shots at goal. This is our second last one, lads, because we've loads of news to get through. When you're away for a week, there's just loads of stuff to catch up on.
I think it's his way of telling me I miss so much. Passive aggressive.
Well, no, there was no football show. There was a lot of football news that we didn't get to. Dublin Flegg. Am I pronouncing that right?
Flegg.
Flegg. Dublin Flegg part 2. So we had Dublin Flegg part 1, me, you and Stevie talking about the Flegg on Hill 16 on Hill 16, and it was banned and it was wrong because we all thought that looked great, and I think it is still gone, and then Dublin fans are going to protest. That protest never materialised in the end. But this is Dublin Flegg part 2, and this is to do with a flag on the Halfpenny Bridge. Okay, I'm going to stop doing that now. Am I doing it right?
You're doing perfectly.
Keep going. Yeah.
Okay, great. So this is a Green Party leader and TD, Eamon Ryan. And he was in the media this week saying that the Dublin banner on the Halfpenny Bridge was cheap and tacky. So there's an Up the Dubs banner on the Halfpenny Bridge, and he says it's defacing one of the most iconic images in Dublin. I'd like to know both of your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, it is. It's a lovely bridge, and a lot of work and money went into this. And if they knew you were going to stick a big banner over it, they could have just put any old bridge up there and stuck a banner over it.
Was there a big kind of controversy about this, or was this just this TD trying to make a few
people mentioned it, and then Dublin City Council had to get involved. So it was actually removed. It was removed by Monday morning anyway. But they were saying that it's only up for, you know, it was up for Dublin and Galway for the league final, which is what you're talking nearly 2 weeks ago now. And they had it up for the All-Ireland as well.
Okay.
Which if it was going to be a permanent structure, I'd have a bit of problem with it, because it is an iconic bridge, and like not everybody in Dublin is of a GA mindset, like, you know, so to commandeer a bridge like that is a bit much. But if it's up for a week either side of Dublin winning something, I don't know, is that idea?
I was reading a piece from Keith Duggan in the Irish Times about it, and he kind of agreed, and I agree too, that it is a little bit cheap and tacky. Like, I mean, it's a banner covering the whole bridge, and I'm not sure if Keith was talking about, like, it's not exactly subtle. Yeah, do you know what I mean? And he was saying you could light up a building in Dublin with Up the Dubs, or like I was thinking you could dye the Liffey blue when Dublin win, or a big you could do something a bit cooler than that kind of tacky banner across the Halfpenny Bridge. And I don't want to agree with this TD, because it's something I would always rally against. Go stop being a pain in the arse, it's only a banner, but it is a tacky banner though, isn't it? Do you know, like, it could go somewhere better than there, or do something cooler, or like you said, more subtle. Paint one of those stupid Viking buses that beep at everybody.
They're only on the back here, right there.
I'd let the air out of every one of those tyres if I got hold of them. Like, I mean, okay, I'm all for up the Dubs somewhere, because it's Dublin City at the end of the day. If they can't paint their own county, just because it's like a multicultural city and it's not all Dublin, it's their county, and they could put up the Dubs wherever they want. I just don't necessarily like it there myself. It's only my personal taste.
Hanging off a building, hanging off the side of a house, or like whatever you want. Like, basically, like, if it was for the Galway game, no one was going via the Hippany Bridge. Do it up around Croke Park somewhere where people were actually going, and there would be a bit of footfall as well. But yeah, like, I agree, like, it is Dublin City. It's their feral city. Like, you stick up the blue and white or whatever you want, but just don't ruin a
just paint
a
some sheep
bridge
like they do everywhere else.
There's no sheep to paint up in Dublin. Come here, just before we finish up, the two games on TG Cahir on Saturday are Ballymun Kickhams versus St Bridget's at 4 o'clock, and then Kilmacud Crokes versus Ballyboden. That's a great local derby. You'd fancy Ballymun Kickhams in the other one, although Bridget's are decent. But Kilmacud Crokes, Anthony Rainbow now manages Ballyboden, so, like, I mean, they're rivals, like I said, so that's a really big game. And it's great to see TG Cahir covering the Dublin Championship. I love the Dublin Championship, and it's by far the most competitive, and the more we can see of those, the better. And on Monday's show, we'll do some sort of review on those games. We'll talk to somebody from the games, and we'll do a show. We're going to do one show on a Monday and a Thursday, football and hurling combined, and for the next couple of weeks until we're back in the Championship. So there's nothing left to do. Only wish Conan the best of luck tonight in Parnell Park. You've never played there before.
Never, big guy.
I just hope I can get his autograph. That's what I'm
so what's your preparation? When are you leaving work now, and have you thought about the whole process of your preparation?
Listen,
your
bags, the team's well prepared. Look, Vincent's going to be a great game. Like, they're obviously champions, they're going to be his favourites, so we're just looking forward to it. We're going to stick to the process and see how we go.
Brilliant stuff, Conan. Look forward to interviewing you on Monday after that. Brilliant insight. Right, good luck, talk to you Monday.
Finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.